Well, it is awesome to be back, and I think if I don't hand this over immediately, I'm going to have some really mad teens. So, Erica, you want to be first?
No, that's the end. That's the end, Gabby. Well, I want to go first so no one takes what I have to say. Yeah. Well, my week in the DR was pretty awesome. We met 7 or 8 teenage boys around all our ages, and they were pretty amazing, very welcoming, really nice, and to see them all so happy, and they each had maybe one change of clothes and a pair of shoes, and to see them so happy and to play with each other and just interact and not worry about all kinds of things was really, really awesome. And to see them come up to all of us and welcome us and, I don't know, become friends with us was really neat. And throughout the week, that's kind of what we did. We hung out with them, we worked, met younger kids, and I mean, they really don't have much, but to them they have a lot because they have each other. One of the boys we met, Julio, we asked him who was his best friend, and he pointed to his little brother, Juan. And I thought that was really cool. And I mean, if we think about it, we have so much, yet we're not happy with what we have, and they have so little, but they have so much fun, and it was just really neat, and I mean, I'm gonna miss them a lot.
My experience was pretty life-changing. The thing I thought a lot of encouragement was the prayer walk. We went around to the community around the school, and it's a all-Haitian community, and they're very looked down upon because Haitians aren't well welcomed there. And our prayer walk, we went around to the houses, and we asked them what they wanted prayer for, and they were so inviting. They brought us all chairs out and for us to sit in their home, and whether it was a dirt home or a cement floor home, that's what they had. And the one house we went to had 11 kids and 2 beds, and it was pretty encouraging to see how close they were with what little they had and how their faith was so strong and so welcoming. They loved for us to pray for them, and they loved for us to come in and visit with them and talk with them and hold their kids. And it was just really encouraging to see that.
Wow. I'm not good at talking in front of people, so I'll try to make this short. Shut up. The trip really touched my heart. All the families and adults were very kind, and the kids were just so loving. They just ran up to you and jumped and hugged you, and like you've known them all your life, and you were their best friend. The houses they lived in were unreal. It was just so run down, and there was garbage everywhere. It was terrible. They were like held up by sticks off a tree. It was crazy. But yet they were so grateful for everything they had. And I didn't realize how grateful and blessed I am and we are until I went. So I'm really thankful I got to go. It was definitely a life-changing experience, and I look at life very differently now.
Like they said, you don't realize how blessed you are until you go down to a place like that and you see how little people have. But what just really touched me was how happy they are. Like, you wouldn't be able to, you go down and see some of those kids, and you wouldn't realize they had nothing. Just, they're happier than us most of the time. We have everything. Compared to them, we have everything, and we're so selfish and ungrateful for what we have. And they just thank God for every little thing, but almost nothing that they have. And we don't see that.
Well, the trip was really amazing. I wasn't ready to leave. Yeah. And just seeing what they have or what they don't have, it hurts your heart.
Okay. Well, I went on the trip last year, and it was with the FCA trip. We didn't go to minister. We went specifically to help a man named Wilkins, but I met him last year for one day, and I could already tell there was a unique anointing and something special about this man. But so down there, to get a job that pays good, then you can, like, you know, live a decent life down there. And decent compared to us would be, like, the poorest of us is a decent life for them. But you, in order to have that, you have to be able to speak English well, so you can, because tourism is, like, the industry that brings in the most money. And this man, he can speak English fluently. He speaks English really well, and he speaks the Spanish language there, and he speaks some Creole, which is the language the Haitians use, so he can speak with Haitians that don't have papers and are legal there. And he speaks a little bit of French, that I found out, too. So this guy speaks 3.5 languages. So he could really be making a lot of money. And he said that his original plan was, you know, he went to college, he got a degree down there. He wanted to get a good job and make money and support his family to lead, have his family live a good life. But then God gave him a vision that he wanted to build a school for the Haitian community down there. And so that's what he did. He set out. He didn't know how he was going to do it. He had no money, no resources, no land. But God provided time after time after time. And now he has a school. I mean, it's a big brick wall, or surrounded by a big brick wall. They're going to get razor wire on top of it. They got a big gate around it. And just a cement building with 4 rooms and like 3 whiteboards, but it's a school for them. And then he has an office beside it that we were working on, as you've seen the video, and they're building a clinic with to keep medicine and exam rooms and stuff to help the kids down there, because they get sick and don't have anything. There's no way for them to go to the hospital because they're Haitians, and the Haitians aren't allowed in the hospitals because they're not legal. But so we went down there to help him, and then he spoke at one of the, we would have a devotional after we would eat dinner at the end of the evening, and he spoke, and it was really powerful, and you can just tell that this guy is on fire for God, and he just doesn't stop, because he takes care of so many kids that aren't his, like those kids that they were talking about, the 6 boys. They, some of them sleep at the school because they don't, like, have a home. They don't have, like, a family, really, and they just sleep at the school. And Wilkins is, like, their father for them, and he provides for them and gives them meals whenever he can and teaches them some English so they can, you know, prosper in the future. There's one boy there, Johnny. He's from the family with 11 children. He has a mother that takes care of 11 kids in a small house about the size of, like, half this stage. And he speaks fluent English, too. Well, not completely fluent, but he's proficient in English. And it was just really encouraging to see that I would love this kid so much, because I can see that he's going to have, like, a good future, that he's going to be a force to help change the way people were brought up there, and that he can hopefully help change the country because they need a change down there.
Well, even though 3 or 4 people said it, I realized that I complain a lot about the stuff I have and that I shouldn't, because they don't have much down there, and they're still so happy about it and love God for what they have and don't have. So I'm going to try my best not to complain for what I have. Do you want this, Julia?
Okay. When we were having our devotion time down there, God kind of just revealed to me one of the things that was lacking in my own life.
how not only everyone's talking about their physical needs and what they have and what they don't have and what we have that they don't have. And yes, that is a problem down there. But what they don't have spiritually, the opportunity-wise that we have here, just really touched me how we have these giant buildings and these high-tech equipment to worship God. And all they have is a church with a dirt floor. But yet they're seeking God levels that we will never experience in the areas that they're at with nothing. Yet they have everything because they have God. And that's kind of what he showed me. Not really the physical aspect, but the spiritual aspect that we're missing. So that's what I saw. I really love the kids. I mean, work, I'm not really good with that kind of stuff. But I can show the kids love, and I really just poured myself out to them. They ripped out my hair so many times. Those braids, those kids, they're amazing. They're like six, and they can braid my whole head. But it was great. They pulled me into their little clubhouse, and they sat me down and started braiding my hair. It was for hours, yeah.
The little clubhouse is like this cement hole underneath the steps.
Yep. They started.
And Julia and I are both in there with like six little girls.
Mm-hmm. They're all. It's hot, crowded.
Yeah. Probably like really. It's really dirty, and there's probably like bugs and stuff.
Yeah.
There was ants everywhere.
When the girls like first came up to the school, and because there were all guys there at first, and we were wondering where the girls were, and when they came, I went out to see them, and all I said was Ola, and they ran up to me and grabbed my hand and pulled me inside, and that was just the beginning. Like, from then on, they were attached to me on my back. It was hot, very hot, but I didn't care. Huh? Ola? Oh, that's high. And I'm not good with Spanish either, so it was kind of just the way that I let them, they just played with my hair.
Yeah, and don't say see if you don't know what they're talking about.
I made that mistake. You don't say yes to everything. Don't do it. If you don't know what they're talking about, don't say see. So, it really was an amazing experience, and I'm looking forward to going back and just experiencing their love and their joy again.
Okay, so I'll try not to cry this time. But going down there and meeting the kids, like, at first I was, when we arrived at the airport and we ordered food, they asked you in Spanish, and we were all trying to, like, figure out what we wanted. And then I ordered my dad the wrong food because he just said he wanted the same as me and he didn't understand what I said to the lady. And they probably ripped us off because it costed a lot of money for this little bit of food. And then we get on a bus from the airport and we head to where we were staying. And it was about 3.5, maybe 4 hours. I slept most of the way. But when I did wake up, we're in this spot where, like, it's really run down, and I'm like, oh my goodness, like, where are we going to be staying? This is really sketchy. I was a little bit nervous. But then you just, like, see the kids, and they know what's going on when, like, Americans are there, and in the streets they're just like, Americano, Americano, and they're just jumping up and down. And so we get off the bus and to the compound. Yeah, there's a lot of kids that have no clothes. Really little kids that have no clothes and
jumping up and down.
Yeah, they're so excited to, like, see people. And we went into the compound, and it was a little rough, but after seeing what I just saw, it was like, yeah, it was like a 5-star resort compared to the houses around us. And we wanted showers because it was very dirty, and there's only cold showers. So we're all freezing in the shower. It kind of felt good. It depends. I don't know. Sometimes I wanted a warm shower. And you can't drink the water there, so we're constantly, like, getting clean water from the compound. But to brush our teeth, we have to, like, use our water bottles to rinse our stuff out. Like, don't drink the water there. And then the next day, so that day we just relaxed and ate, and then the next day was just, it blew me away. First, when we woke up, we ate some breakfast, then we went to the school. And when they said they built a school, that's not what I had in mind. I knew it was going to be not like our school at all, but I didn't have any idea it was going to be like that. And they don't have a lot. They have some chairs, some tables, and it's about four rooms, and it's amazing.
Pretty tiny.
Yeah. And just the way that, like, the big gate they have in the front and the cement wall around it, it's a bit scary. And the kids that were there at first were just those six or seven boys that we all became really close with. And, like, at first, Kelsey and I were like, oh, well, what should we do? Should we go say hi? Should we just stand here and wait for them to give us work? Like, I didn't know what to do. So we went up, and we climbed up this ramp thing. And I was nervous because my knee was huge and swollen from softball the day before. I barely could walk on it. It hurt really bad. And so we went up there, and we said hi, and we asked them their names in Spanish. And so then that was the first time we met them. And it was just amazing. And they were a little bit shy at first. But then after that, they just became, like, best friends. And even though we can't speak their language fluently and they don't really know what we're saying all the time, it's amazing that you can still be that close with someone that doesn't even speak your language. And the little kids that came, they just want to be held. They just want to be played with. And they probably have 2 changes of clothes if they're lucky. Those boys we saw 3 days, they probably wore the same thing. Like, all of them probably wore the same thing at least 2 of the days. Like, they didn't have anything. And it really opened my eyes because I complain when Hannah gets something more than me. And I'm like, well, Mom, you got her an extra shirt. Where's my extra shirt? Like, and I have so many, and they have, like, 2. It was really touching. And I can't wait to go back.
Yeah, and Hunter did a good job this morning, considering he probably got to bed at 1 o'clock on the announcements there, too. Going down, I went with no expectations, I guess, or not knowing. I didn't know our flight times. We had them, but there was enough going on in life that, you know, I knew someone else was handling it. So I'm going to show up, and we're going to get on this plane, and... I guess it's the least prepared I've ever been for a trip. So, you know, we definitely took the kids with some really big hearts down there. Really impressed with what they were able to do this week. It really moves you. I guess that's how you go on maybe a mission trip, is you let God do the work. You don't go with those expectations. You don't go with your agenda. You let him make that out. And I think that's kind of what happened. You know, the situation there, I know very little about it. It'll definitely make me want to dive into knowing a little bit more of the relationship there. Why the Dominican struggles so much. You know, the Haitians aren't seen in a very good light by the Dominicans, by the Dominican government. So therefore, these people that may have been there for 25 years that are Haitians, and they might have left Haiti for whatever reason, they have no papers, you know, no citizenship. Therefore, they don't get any medical, no school. You know, if they go to the hospital, they're going to be the last ones taken care of. They really need an advocate to get anything done there. And that's a lot what we dealt with this week. But there also are some very poor Dominicans, and if they don't have papers, they're treated just like the Haitians are also. You know, maybe the situation, they were born outside the hospital or whatever, but there's a lot of just undocumented people down there. And with that, you know, I know Hunter and Dave mentioned this guy Wilkins you know, almost a year ago. You know, this is a great man, just is doing wonderful things, and to go down and be able to help him and share a part of his vision was excellent, and I think that's what God's plan was. He lives and is from this town that we stayed in. We stayed at a missionary, I don't know, we call it a compound. It's a fortified building, walls surrounding two houses, one for the guard that watches at night, lives there, one for the missionary family that's from Maryland. They've been there about a year and a half, I guess, the Metzger family. And then the large three-story building that we ate in, slept in, and had lots of extra room, actually, for more groups. And that's where we operated from. So we were about 15 minutes from the school or so. But there's just so many stories to tell of what went on down there. You know, if you want to check your heart, go down there. You know, you'll find it, because it'll get ripped out several times. It was really hard to see, but, you know, we have some kids that really, really love and cherish younger kids and kids their own age. The way they bonded was incredible. You know, the tears that were shed just leaving there, you know, they just didn't want to leave the country as much as they love you all to come back. You know, they really wanted to stay. And you wanted to take them home, too. You know, the little kids were just, you know, they didn't have a lot. And then, you know, just what the purpose of the trip was, I don't fully know yet. You know, was it, we helped out down there. You know, we bonded with them. We tried to show them God's love, but, you know, maybe it was for God to work on us. Maybe it was for us to be praying for the Metzger family, to be praying for Wilkins and his family, the school, you know, really the nation. You know, the nation needs a lot of prayer to get their situation right. You know, these kids deserve to have a chance, and they don't have that right now. Like we talked about Johnny, who was our interpreter a lot of the time. He's impressive. You know, he's 14, 13. You know, the attention he gave us to make sure that things were translated well, the situation where he comes from. You know, we talked about their house only being half the size of this stage. That's only half the story. You know, what it's made of is sticks. There's a, you know, a simple pole structure, then metal cans that were probably 3 gallon cans. Taking the bottoms out of them and flatten them out, and that's the siding. You know, hundreds and hundreds of these metal cans, you know, leaks terribly. This is how Wilkins grew up also, even as a Dominican, grew up very poor. Dirt floors, most of them. You know, it's a luxury to have a cement floor. So when it rains, it's coming inside or it's going through, it's coming down a hill, you know, to find a place where you're not going to get wet while you're sleeping, either on the ground or in a bed, you know, that's, you don't sleep well, you know, you don't function well. And to function at a high level like Johnny does is really impressive, you know. As it is right now politically, he has very little chance of ever doing anything because he can't go to college unless something changes. But being undocumented, he, you know, for him to stay on the straight and narrow path is going to be difficult for him because, you know, there's going to be other things wanting his attention that he could, you know, that may show more promise than, you know, the straight and narrow to him anyways. I don't, you know, it was very moving. The video just, it's very thrown together. I wanted to make it a little bit better, but we did it on the fly. You'll see you know, some of the work that we did, we were pouring cement, the ceiling for Wilkins' office that sits above the kitchen outside the school, steps, moving a lot of gravel, the equipment that they have to deal with, it's almost all homemade. It's amazing that they get things done, how they get things done. So, you know, that slide will show some of that. We did get to have some fun at the end and play ball with the with a lot of the local kids that we dealt with and some more. They love baseball. It was, you know, to yeah, and they're good. And on the last day, we got to go to the beach, and we did take the ball team with us. So we did get some fun and some rest and relaxation, but it was really life-changing. So much that these two were already planning their next trip down before we left. You know, they were all just incredible with the kids. Really, really good.
Okay, I just wanted to share one more thing. Wilkins, the first night when we were there and he was talking to us about what's going to happen the next day, someone asked about how many kids at his school that he can count that have fathers in their home. And he said he can count on one hand the amount of kids that have, yeah, it's yeah, it was about that. Out of 75 kids, about four kids have dads. Yeah. And like all those little girls, like, I need my dad, and all those little girls need their dad too, and they don't have one.
One more thing about the these kids, at the end of the week, we gave each of them a pair of our sunglasses because all throughout the week they were so intrigued with our sunglasses. So we each gave them a pair. And yeah, and so to see the joy on their faces, to receive a pair of sunglasses is more than any of us will ever know because it's truly amazing. And we may have touched them, but in reality, they've touched me, and I can't wait to go back and see them all because I miss them.
Well, I have to tell you all that this is an awesome group of kids, and I was so blessed. It was really an honor. You know, I wondered going into it, I knew them, you know, I sang on worship team with them and helped out a few of the fundraisers, and I never thought that I was going to have an issue with them, but I have been so blown away by their compassion and their willingness to submit to the torture. You can't hardly imagine having three or four little girls combing your hair and parting your hair and holding it and doing tight, tiny braids. And Kelsey, the first time they did it, the others were like taking out the few that they had in theirs, but Kelsey's whole head was done. And she said, I said, "You didn't take your hair out." She goes, "I'm not going through that again tomorrow." I had to laugh because that was such wisdom. And somebody commented about lice, you know, that lice can be an issue and you guys need to be careful. But they didn't hesitate. They didn't stop just pouring their life into these kids and hugging them and carrying them on their shoulders. I could hardly remember who was who. But these kids knew each one by name. And they greeted them and talked to them. And it was incredible. And there was this little guy. Oh, my gosh, he had such a face. You should see the faces of these kids. You look at me and go, "Oh, what a face." And this little guy just loved Devin like nothing I've ever seen. And Devin, he had like this permanent fixture on his shoulders. And he has these sunglasses that have flags on them. And this little boy wore them like all the time. And they were almost the size of his head. They were just, it was so cute. And but they just did that. And these kids, the little ones, would come up and they'd get mad and they'd kind of push or they'd start to hit. And they would just bear up and say, no, no. And they'd get whapped and no, no. And they'd bear up and they'd hold them and love them and walk with them and held their hands. We're talking germs beyond words. And, like, Dave and Rob and I would just, like, shake our head and go, oh, my goodness. Because it was incredible. It is so horrible there. And the landscape is so gorgeous that it's an oxymoron. It's like it does not fit to have such poverty and such disaster and such pain and suffering and drought and lack. And then you look and there's the mountains and the ocean. It was gorgeous. And there was trash everywhere. You can't hardly imagine, unless you've ever seen it, trash, like this trash. And we took a walk and there was a burn area, the garbage dump where they burned the trash. And it was just loaded with trash, and we were kind of joking about how they missed some, because there was diapers and papers and clothing and a shoe and just glass, broken glass everywhere. And these little kids barefoot just running across it. And Dave kept going, oh, look at the glass. How is he doing that? I'm like, he's got to have like an inch callus. I mean, I can't fathom that they can just run and play in this garbage and not be wounded, like, severely. Yeah, I could hardly walk on the pebble beach. I mean, it was like sliding, and it's rocky, and you're like, I recognized my age many times during this week, and and they never, ever once gave me a hard time about it. But the girls, you know, they talk. I didn't feel like I wasn't a part. They so made me a part of the group, and they were such a team. And there was another team that joined us, Anthony, which is his brother, Dave's brother-in-law, and two boys from their church. And they all incorporated. They were a team, and they worked as a team. And nobody was left out. And you would see, you know, three or four people together, and then the next time you see them, it's two that were there and two of someone else, and because they kept intermingling, it was just very impressive, and I was just blessed and honored to be a part of their team. And if you ever get an opportunity to know these teens, I'm telling you, you'll be blessed. And I thought a lot about my husband while I was gone, because we did construction and the cement pouring, and I was tying rebar and shoveling rocks, and I'm thinking of my husband, thinking he'd be so proud of me if he could only see me now. And their equipment, and you'll see it, it's like horrendous. And I thought, oh man, Tim would so fit in here, because that's what he does. Not quite like that, but it was neat. And the family that were there, they have four children. They have more children, but the four that were there were so a part of their lives. They just blended, and they were able to encourage these guys with friendship that they lack, the ability to just talk and communicate and have fun and play games and work together. So it was just impressive and good. So there, like they said, there's lots to tell, but I think you guys kind of get a feel that you miss something large, and I hope that it stirs your heart, because I'm hoping to go again. If God doesn't send me there with them, I hope he sends me somewhere with someone, because it was good.
So when Marie was talking about, like, how everything's all run down, but then, like, the land, the other beautiful parts of the island, it made me think, you got to look past all the rundown things, and not so much the buildings and the landscape, but the people. They're poor. They don't look like they have anything, but you got to look into their hearts and just the faith they have, and how they can have that kind of faith when they have nothing is just amazing. And
I thought of another thing. when Julia and I were sitting out front with the little girls on this like patio thing, they were done doing our hair, thank God, but we were just sitting there playing like their version of Patty Cake or something, I don't know. They were singing some chant like that. And the one girl, she told me Tango Hombre, which means I'm hungry. And like it was almost time for lunch for us, and I get hungry, and I just ate breakfast like a couple hours ago, and I'm already starving from like all this hot heat and all the work we're doing, well, kind of work that we're doing. I don't know. I didn't really work. I just played with the kids. But I was hungry, and I knew it was going to be rice and beans because that's what it was every day for lunch.
Sometimes it was beans.
Yeah, sometimes it was beans and rice, but, you know. And that just broke my heart. Like, I didn't know what to tell her because I didn't have food to give her. And all the kids that were there, they made enough food, and once we ate, we had to give our dirty spoons and bowls back to them, and just whatever we didn't eat was still in the bowl, and they would just put more in the bowl, and the kids would just eat that, like, no clean dishes. Yeah. And so I knew that food was coming, but I didn't really know how to tell her that in Spanish. And then the little girls, when they're playing with us, we have water bottles with us. It's so hot, and you get so thirsty, and we're drinking from them. And then they ask for agua, and you're not supposed to let them drink after you because you don't know what type of disease or sickness they could have. And it's so tough not to give them your water because when a kid asks for water, like, you can't just, yeah. So then I started, like, telling them to open their mouth and just, like, dump some in. And, like, then all the rest of the girls want some, and then you're eventually out of water. And then a couple times we had to wait for more water, and I'm like, oh, man, I'm so thirsty. But they're so much thirstier. Like, they don't have water to drink all the time. And a kid underneath the steps, when it was time for them to eat after we had already eaten, a kid was hiding under the steps, and I went under there, and he had two bowls of food. And he was hiding because, like, he was so hungry that he had to take two, but he was too scared to let anyone know that he had two because I'm sure he knew that everyone else was hungry too and that he should have only had one. But when they're that hungry, it just is sad. Well, along the lines of, like, food. After we'd eaten, they passed out the food to the other kids. And I spent time with a lot of the girls there, and two girls in specific. Is that how you say it? Okay. Specifically, okay. I had already eaten, so I was just sitting with them, and they sat across from each other, like me and my dad. And they had one bowl, and they would each just take one bite and then pass it to the other. And the one girl held the cup in between her legs, and they passed the bowl, and they get a drink, and passed the bowl. And how they just shared with each other and were grateful for what they had was amazing, just to sit there and watch them. And they even took time to offer me some after I'd eaten. And just how they gave it, and that's all that they had was the one bowl, but they sat there and they gave to each other, and they were content with what they had, and how they just offered it to me, even though that's all that they would have that day, just really touched my heart watching them give out of what they had when really all they had was nothing.
How they get water there, there was this, like, hose thing, and it was in the streets, and they all had these buckets, all different sizes, but filthy. And they all carried them and kept filling them up and taking them back and, cut, like, many trips. And
here we are, there's no running water.
Or electricity.
Yeah, or electricity, unless they steal it from the line by cabbage. Probably, I don't even know, maybe a 10 to 20 block area has no running water. And there's several homes in there. Wow. It's a very small compound. Yeah. And outside the compound walls, the missionaries run homes. They have a well. And they share that community. So there's that one source where they can come to get the water, like Kelsey's talking about, and they do that almost all day.
But there were these little girls, and they were just carrying these gallons of things, and me and Hannah were helping them fill up and carry them back. We probably made, like, almost 10 trips. It was and we were filling up other, there were some other boys that helped too with the water, and the house we were carrying it to, she had this big rusty container, it was 55 gallons, and we were filling that up, and she was, she they use it for washing clothes, drinking, making supper, whatever they can, whatever food they can make, washing dishes, everything. They use it for everything. And, yeah, and while we were going there, I went, I saw when they're done washing clothes, they have, like, barbed wire along their houses, and they hang their clothes there to dry, and I saw baby clothes hanging there, and I, the woman that was with us can kind of speak Spanish, and I asked her if she had a baby, like, asked her to ask the woman if there was a baby, because I love babies, and she said yes, and it was sleeping inside, but I can go pick it up, and so she let me go into her home, and I went into the room, and I saw the baby laying there, and no one can really afford diapers because they're more expensive, so none of the kids had diapers on, really, and it peed on the bed, and it was just so sad, but I picked it up, and I was holding it, and it was just so sad that they can't even afford diapers for the kids. And
was this it, a boy or a girl?
It was a girl. So it was one spot. It was pee that. Yeah, but it was just unreal. It was crazy.
And a lot of these kids helped the locals carry that water back to their homes, and they actually got to see that inside.
Yeah, I carried it on my head.
Yeah. And, but, and they're carrying it at probably 4 years old and running. The missionaries talked about a boy that, you know, they go out and what we did too at nighttime, away from the streets, was go out and play with these kids and just try to build relations with them. You know, and Todd Metzger pointed out, you know, this boy, we've always come out here and played, and he's never once stopped. He's probably maybe 10 or 11 years old, and he hauls water all day or all evening to night, and he never stops once. He goes, I don't know where he's taking it. I don't know where, you know, his home is, or, you know, I hope to talk to him one day, but if there's one kid I'm going to buy a wheelbarrow for, it's going to be that kid right there.
It's not just a small jug.
Yeah.
Jug that he carries on each shoulder.
And these little girls, it's they carry really, them on their heads, like on top of their heads, and they're probably this big. I'd probably complain when my mom tells me to go downstairs and grab the laundry basket, and it's probably lighter than their washer.
Not anymore.
No, I won't anymore. Amen. And like, you just walk in the streets and this lady hands me her baby. I don't know this lady, like I didn't even say a word to her. This little girl's just holding my hand, and the little girl goes up to the baby, grabs the baby, and hands it to me. And I just walk around with the baby for a while. Like, I'm like, maybe I should return this? Like, maybe the mom's curious? Like, those kids have, not, like, the mom was cooking. And eventually I brought the baby back before we went back to the compound. And it was just really, and we went into the house that Kelsey held the baby. We went back to that house because those little girls were, like, dragging us everywhere and telling us to go here, go there. And I think they knew the baby. I don't know.
They're very warm and welcoming people. They're not lazy. They're not stupid. They do a lot with very little. Very nice people, though.
Go, Dad, go.
Stop talking.
Hurry now.
Okay. And just,
you lost.
I encourage you to, you know, there's so many stories. You know, I ask these guys, every one of them will share something different. But they've got a ton of them, and you can probably stay up here all day. But in your free time, ask them about their experience and what they got out of it, their most memorable points.
Kathy.
I was wondering why you don't spend money with this man that runs the school since he spends so much money.
Well, somebody might talk to the board about that in the not-too-distant future.
They asked about sometimes getting closer.
Yes. Yeah, there was a lot sent down, not just money, but there was a lot in terms of school supplies, books, toys, you know, things for the kids to play with, games. There's just probably several hundred pounds worth of supplies. Some of it has already been taken down, and some of it is waiting till the next shipment that's going to be made down there. So I guess I'll share quickly kind of a mildly amusing story. I'm surprised nobody else beat me to it, but it's only mildly amusing because my name isn't Rob Olinger. But but I'll share that because I don't want to stand up here and cry like a big baby, and if I talk about much of anything else, that's what I'll do. These kids have done a great job of sharing what has happened, and you know, I think with what Hunter shared and what Rob shared, I think you get an idea about this man Wilkins and how he has laid his life down to serve these people. Okay, back to the funny story. So I believe this was our last full day working at the school. And, you know, we did some hard work that day. They had this giant pile of gravel kind of in, I'll just call it, the northeast corner of the compound of the school grounds. And they said, you know what, we need this moved from here down to the southwest corner of the compound. I'm like, okay, where's the bobcat? As if that's a thing there, okay? So we had shovels and buckets and manpower and womanpower. And so, you know, it took several hours, but just shoveling, filling buckets and carrying and hauling down. And but, you know, even when we showed up that morning, these Dominican boys and then one other man that's he's not even a father or a relative that I know of to any of the boys there. He's just, must just be a man with a heart as big as his arms. I think he wouldn't be afraid to arm wrestle Big Doug. I mean, this guy was put together. But, you know, we showed up. It's 102 degrees, and he's already been out there swinging that pickaxe. And, I mean, the soil is just unreal. But trying to dig up and make preparations to pour a little bit of a concrete slab to make a basketball court. And so that's what we needed to move this pile of rocks that day. So we did that. And so I'm just trying to paint you a picture that it was hard work, and it was after a couple of days of doing, you know, some hard work and kind of short nights and not a lot of sleep. So I'm trying to build it up, make it sound. Yeah. So the plan was that day, after we were done with work and our lunch and everything, we were going to all go to this baseball field that's not too far away from the school, and that's when we had this baseball game. Well, Wilkins needed to leave. He had to travel back to his home to pick up some of the baseball equipment and some different things that were needed to do that. So he left. Some people from our group went with Wilkins, and they were gone. The rest of us, we were supposed to wait at the compound or at the school until our transportation, the Metzgers, until they showed up and they would take us from the school to the ball field. Okay, so you get the picture. We're hanging out there. We don't have Wilkins. We don't have our missionary with us yet. And we're just kind of overseeing all of these school kids that, you know, have been there all week. Well, at one point, a fight did break out between these little girls. Okay, they're like throwing rocks at each other. And so some of us, you know, we realized what was going on. We ran down and, you know, we kind of broke up the fight. And, you know, this one poor little girl is just laying face down in the dirt crying. And, you know, some of our girls went down and just took care of her and got her cleaned up and calmed down. And, I mean, it was a beautiful thing to see them take care of. But so we're waiting for our ride to show up. And the ride finally gets there, and we're all making our way up in there, and there's 11 people in our group, and Anthony had three with him, and then there's the missionary and his boys and everything, and so there's 21 people on a Chevy S10 pickup, okay, and that thing never stopped once, Doug. So anyway, you know, during during the days we were there, like I said, there were 11 people in our group. I counted to 11 thousands of times because I'm sitting here. I'm responsible for all of these people, and it's just, one, two, three, four, six, seven, eight, nine, ten. Where is everybody, okay? Just over and over and over again. So everybody's piled into this thing. Where's Rob?
No, wait, we get to the field.
No, no, no. This was before we got to the field. I asked Doug, I asked others. I said, where's Rob? And Doug and others told me, oh, well, he went with Wilkins to go get the stuff. Are you sure? I don't, because, you know, when Wilkins left, all I knew was Anthony was going. Nah, I think Rob went with Wilkins. Okay. So I jumped on the truck, and we drive on over to the baseball field. And so, yeah, we have to, like, lock down the gate and everything at the school before we leave. So this place, it's all sealed up, concrete wall, razor wire on top. We get to the baseball field, and Wilkins comes back with his crew, and Gabby's like, where's Daddy?
I wanted my dad because I needed money, guys. That's not the only reason I wanted him. So, like, candy. This little boy is selling peanut brittle, and one of the missionary sons bought some, and he gave some to us. And I was like, I need to buy this. Where's my dad? And so then I'm like, Wilkins, where's my dad? And he's like, he didn't go with us. Like, oh, my gosh. And my dad speaks no Spanish at all. He had no idea what any of these kids say or what the people are saying.
He said he climbed over once, but he got scared. So he climbed back.
Then I didn't check my phone either.
Yes. Yeah, so, basically, that's what happened. It was like, no, Rob wasn't with Wilkins. I hope he's at the compound, or, you know, at the school, because, and that's, I guess, at one point, he did kind of, I guess I should say kind of what happened, how he managed to get left behind. Like he said, it was siesta time. He was stretched out, taking a nap down around the corner where none of us were. I thought I looked around. I thought, well, you know what, he's going to be up in this corner here where it's nice and shady, and it's just kind of a little cubbyhole place. And he wasn't there, and it's like, okay, I guess maybe he really did go with Wilkins. But so, yeah, we left without Rob, and I guess he did get brave enough to, like, climb up over the gate and was going to... Yeah, Uno Americano, you know, wouldn't have been a good thing. So Rob had some wisdom, and he climbed back into the school, and, you know, he didn't have any water to drink. He's just locked up there by himself. So I didn't lose any kids, but did briefly lose an adult. But, you know, we were, what's that? Yeah, when we realized he wasn't with Wilkins, you know, we sent a search party back to get him. So, you know, he's... you know, it's... We've been sharing a long time, and, you know, we really could go on all day, I'm sure. Like I said, they've done a good job of trying to paint a picture of what we saw, what we experienced, what we did. Rob, he put together a movie to give you an idea of some of the moments and some of the things that we did. And like you said, it was put together on the fly, literally, while he was in airplanes. So I'm amazed that he was able to get that all put together and ready to show in here today. So you heard a lot about the situation and the things that we saw while we were there. And, you know, the Rob and Marie have both said so, but you know, I just want to really commend these guys. And, you know, you know, you hear so much negativity about this generation. You hear all the bad things. You hear about how they're disrespectful and they're lazy and drugs and alcohol and promiscuous and, you know, all these negative things, all these awful labels. And you know what? While there may be some truth to that, let me tell you, there's a remnant that loves God and is willing to pursue Him with a passion and to take His love and to pour out and share with other people, even the least of these. I was blown away. I mean, I knew they're a special group of kids. I've been around them enough to know that. But just to see the way that they did, they bonded together, they united together as a team. I didn't hear a complaint. I didn't hear anybody grumble. There was no drama. And, you know, they just did whatever they could just to be the hands and feet of Jesus with whoever was with them at that point in time. And I'm convinced that it's not just a temporary, momentary experience that they had while far away from home and away from their family and the friends that they're used to being around, but I'm confident that each one had a heart change and a life change that's going to be lasting, that there's going to be eternal fruit that comes forth because of what God has done in their lives, because of their willingness and their obedience to go and to serve. And, you know, I look forward to not only having the opportunity to go back again with these guys someday, but others that are coming along behind, others that are going to be excited that, oh, I want to go. I want to do what those big kids have done, because they come back and they see the joy of the Lord on them and they hear the testimonies, and that there's going to be young ones that are going to be inspired to go and to serve Jesus the same way that these have. And maybe there's some not so young people here too that have been touched. But that it's not just going to be something that's reserved for going far away from home, but they're going to continue to see Jesus in the people around them and to show Jesus to the people around them, and that there's going to continue to be a love and a grace in their hearts that they can't help but share with everybody that God puts in their path. So I'm so blessed and blown away to have had the opportunity and the honor to be there with them, and I'm so thankful for Rob and Marie coming along, and for all of you that, you know, helped support and sacrificed and gave to be able to send people. So I just want to thank everybody for that.